Good news tonight.
I like good news.
We had brownies and we had milk.
No eggnog?
There's a little eggnog, yeah.
Oh, buddy. Oh, man, that's great.
Yeah, so I'm set tonight.
Yeah, you must be full then, huh?
Yeah, and I had half of a pizza and just had a little brownie, got a little eggnog, and then I got some water for the recording process.
Tell me about this pizza.
It is Aldi brand pizza, which is better than you'd think.
Like a frozen pizza?
Yeah.
I won't knock it because I love all pizzas, but
yeah.
But yeah, I haven't had a frozen pizza in a while.
It's basically like cafeteria style pizza, which I'm down
like square. Like square.
It's a round pizza, but it has the same like taste and consistency.
Okay.
Yeah.
Why not DiGiorno? This is not a DiGiorno ad.
we've done DiGiorno. We do DiGiorno on occasion when we want stuffed crust, but Aldi is cheaper for most of the groceries, and that's where we happen to go. So
this podcast is hitting a new level with pizza reviews of frozen pizzas. Like we are prime podcast right now.
I think there's a character in Community that would do reviews of like products that he'd buy at the grocery store
of food,
like frozen pizza and
fruit snacks.
Yeah,
fruit gushers.
Yeah, various kinds of chips and high C and all that stuff.
That's awesome. That's a real thing, though. There's like a whole section of YouTube dedicated to that. That's where they got the joke from.
Yeah.
It's great.
So I'm looking at my... I almost said the name of the website out loud. There is a certain website where particular versions of a very popular series of science fiction films can be found. Science fantasy films can be found. Where I recently obtained some 4K versions of said original films. And I'm looking at the ratio that's maintained on this website. And my ratio went from about 25 to 14.
What does the ratio?
Just by downloading. Well, on this website, it monitors how much you download from the website and how much you upload to the website or to the other users using the website. And my ratio was pretty high because I'm a good seeder, as they say, and a very infrequent leecher. But I downloaded two files recently that together amounted to about 130 gigabytes.
That's a lot of gigs.
Yeah. So my ratio tanked. But
oh
still, 14 is considered very good. Like, one is what you aim for.
Okay. I would have assumed your ratio would have gotten much better because now everybody's going to be coming to you. Oh, that's not how it works, right?
It's based on availability. So if I were the only person that was downloading this, that was like seeding this, mm-hmm. then yes, my ratio could theoretically skyrocket because I'd be the only place to get this. That's actually happened. That's primarily the reason why my ratio is so good on this website, because all I download from this website is the science fantasy content. And mm-hmm. In this particular case, I think there's probably 70 to 80 people seating each of these currently. So pretty good considering that about 370 people have downloaded it in total. So it's a very small portion of people that are keeping it on their thing and seating it. But I'm nice like that.
You host the Plex server.
I do, but it's not like I don't share it very widely.
No.
Yeah.
You're good like that, though, is what I'm trying to say.
I am good like that. And I do own like several legitimate copies of these movies as well, so nothing here is actually illegal.
All right, so that entitles you to fan films as well.
Mm.
Right? If you own the original copy.
I don't know.
Isn't that kind of like the fan editor's kind of motto is like, you cannot watch my fan film unless you own the actual movie.
You're supposed to own it because watching it is technically replacing, it's not, if you were to watch a fan film of a popular series, you would have to you would have to watch that fan film instead of watching something that you could pay for, the original version that you could pay for. So yeah, there's some logic there. I'm not sure how well it tracks, but I think I'm covered either way. But I'll tell you what, man, the 4K versions, the 4K scans of these 35 millimeter reels that were found for these Star Wars movies are absolutely gorgeous. They're so good.
I bet. Oh man.
Yeah.
I wanted to do all the Harmy editions. Oh shit. Well, can we cut that out?
That's fine. That's fine. yeah, the Harmy editions are great, and that's what I've been watching for years, because they're really the best that you could get for a very long time. But the thing about those is that they're recreations. Like they took the Blu-ray versions, the Laserdisc versions, you know, whatever the best possible version was for every given thing, in order to make something. I think they only released those at 1080p. I don't think that they've released the Harmony ones in 4K. I could be wrong.
No, not yet.
Okay. So those ones are great and they look fantastic, but they're still not really the original thing. And I think that's what most like hardcore fans are aiming for. They want to watch the original thing. And there's a lot of ways to do that now. Within the past couple of years, Team Negative One, they put out the silver screen edition, which was just a really, really great scan. They did a revision that did some color correction and some additional fixes on some errors to the film. And it looks great. I watched that a month ago and it looks amazing. And then I decided that I wanted to get what's technically the silver screen edition version 2, which is 4K 77. So it's 4K scans of some 35 millimeter reels that they were able to obtain, and they've done it for Star Wars, and they've done it for Return of the Jedi, and they're currently working on Empire Strikes Back. But apparently, it's a super expensive process that takes like upwards of like $15,000 to create. So, and that's not including like man hours. So it's a crazy process. I'm glad that somebody's doing it.
Just somebody took it on themselves to just make that their after work project or something.
Yep.
Nobody's paying them for that.
No, definitely not. It's a labor of love. It's a very expensive labor of love that's driven by donations, and that's great. And really, like, on if you look at the Project 4K page on the StarWarsTrilogy.com, there's a paragraph. It's a quote from a George Lucas interview with American Cinematographer magazine in 1997, and George says there will only be one, and it won't be what I would call the rough cut. It'll be the final cut. The other one will be some sort of interesting artifact that people will look at and say, there was an earlier draft of this. What ends up being important in my mind is what the DVD version is going to look like, because that's what everybody is going to remember. The other versions will disappear. Even the 35 million tapes of Star Wars out there won't last more than 30 or 40 years. 100 years from now, the only version of the movie that anyone will remember will be the DVD version of the special edition. So basically, like, that paragraph in itself, they put this on the top of their page just as like a fuck you, George Lucas, because I don't think he ever expected that fans would be hunting down several sources of these original reels and digitizing them at 4K resolution.
For a director that was so cutting edge, it's so funny to hear him be so like short-sighted,
right? Yeah.
And yeah. Not really thinking ahead of like in terms of the fan base, you know, what they might want.
Yeah, it's he had no clue. I mean, he just had in his mind, he had this like vision that he wanted to see out, and the ultimate vision was bad in comparison to what we originally had. So I'm glad that, you know, folks have done it.
Like when I finished my last album, and it was like, I don't know how many months later, probably like 6 months later. And I was like, I had written like a couple more songs, and I was like, oh, maybe I should go back to the studio and like touch some other stuff up. And like, you know, I felt like I had to slap myself in the face, like, so stop it. It's not going to get better. You're just delaying the inevitable here. You're just trying to, like, just because you can do it doesn't mean you should do it. It's really the key to go by here.
Yeah. I mean, nothing's ever finished, right? You just have to like let it go. And with George Lucas, I don't even think like that was originally the case. I think it's just that, you know, he might have had some more things in his mind when it began, but it wasn't like technically feasible at the time. And then once he became the richest filmmaker on earth, He's like, well, yeah, I can do that now. And he just did it. Whether or not that was a good idea, like, I think that's up for debate, even though pretty much everybody agrees on the point that it's not. But yeah, I think George Lucas is a different case, because I think it was just ego after the success of his movies. He just thought he could do no wrong, and that was just wrong, because he did all these like terrible adjustments on the one films, the original set of films that got him all the money. And then he basically self-produced this monstrosity of a prequel trilogy that's mostly bad. It's yeah,
he's
I
like,
don't know.
He's like Kanye, I feel like, you know? He's kind of just like he's like the film Kanye. He just kind of does stuff. Nobody's really asking.
Yeah, that's true. That's the thing. Nobody is asking a single thing of him, and he just puts it out there, and people are going to look at it, because of course.
Yeah. Hmm. I think it's sort of a compliment to both of them, you know?
I guess.
Titans of their industries.
That's true. How you been, Mike? What you been up to this week?
Just working. I got a lot of late shifts this week. Like, it was just a slew of just like 1 to 10, 12 to 9. And I've never had that many in a row before. You'll have a one-off every once in a while, you know, before your off day or something like that. They'll just slap you in the face with a late shift or whatever. Or it'll just be in the middle of your week or something like that. And now it's just been a week of, you know, not getting up late, because Zarin gets up pretty early, so I wake up with her usually. And then it's just like, you only have a few hours. Like, if you wake up at 7 or 8 in the morning and you're working at 12 or 1, that means you need to be out the door. I need to be out the door an hour before my shift. So it's like, you wake up at 8, or say, and then you have a couple of hours to do everything you need to do for the day. You know, like maybe 3.5-4 hours. And a lot of that includes walking the dog and, you know, trying to do like a little bit of work that I'm not going to be able to do later, because I'm getting out at 10, which means I don't get back to 11. It's just like it's a weird adjustment, and that circadian rhythm gets thrown off. So I'll get home at 10 and want to eat dinner, because my lunch break was like 4 or 5.
Yeah.
And yeah, I'll get home at 10 or 11 and need to eat dinner. And then I'll be wired for like 3.5-4 hours. And
why the change in schedule?
It just happens. It's the life of a retail employee.
Yeah.
That's just what it is. You know, it sucks. And it's super unpredictable. Your days off every week change, you know. Yeah. I mean, you had super early shifts, you know.
Yeah.
Did you ever have the dreaded clopen shift where you close the night before and then wake up really early and open the next morning?
Well, there are periods when, you know, being in management, there are only so many different people that could possibly take your shift, like maximum of 4 for a while.
Yeah,
and then that maximum actually dropped down to 3 while I was still a manager. So there were several periods when it was only me and one other manager opening and closing every single day. So we didn't get days off. There were a couple times when I would have to not only close the night before, but open and close that day. I would be the only manager on. It sucked.
Open and close. How is that legal?
Well, that's the only way I could get days off. Like that we could get any days off when it was just the two of us. And otherwise we would have to pull in people from other stores.
So do you have to pull a double or something like that?
It's not quite a double, because there was like an overlap. We would usually just come in an hour later than we would for the morning, and try to leave as quickly as we could after we closed.
Oh, I see what you mean.
But there would be, you know, if I had the opening shift and another manager had the second shift, that person would come in like halfway through my day, which would allow me to take a break, and then they could take a break before I left. But if it was just the two of us that were on the schedule at all, I'd have to work a whole day, which is particularly bad because you have to like either pack a lunch or convince one of your employees to go grab your lunch for you. And then you can't leave the premises at all. So you're just stuck inside fluorescent lights literally all day.
Retail should be banned.
Yeah, it's the worst.
It's a terrible, terrible, terrible place.
I think we're edging closer to it all the time.
I know. I do, there is something to be said for a good retail experience, like on the customer side. But as far as like the working experience, it's just miserable, man.
Yeah, it's pretty bad.
It should be banned.
It's just getting worse, like from every angle though. Like for the customer, it's worse because there's less availability, and you know, less reliability, like places are closing. And then on the employee side, it's worse because the employees or the customers feel so entitled. I think that the entitlement has just gotten progressively worse over the last two decades. And it's just, it's awful. Like, we have to deal with just awful people in those jobs, and they just don't give a damn.
Yeah. The advent of social media has made it really easy to be a pain in the ass customer.
You think that's it? You think it's social media's fault?
Don't
get me wrong. I like to blame
everybody
for everything, but
it gives everybody a platform and it gives everybody a voice. Mm. And like, I have a friend that like, and regardless of whether that voice makes a difference, it is something that every company is investigating. Mm. Like I think about my Hertz experience that I had when I was recording the last album. I had to rent a car and some crazy stuff happened with the car rental. And I couldn't get through to anybody at Hertz over the phone. They couldn't help me at the place, and there was nothing I could do except tweet at
them.
I added them, and it felt disgusting. I felt ugly inside, but I had to do it. And it was just like, I don't know, man. Somebody came through, and it turns out that like there's these companies like Hertz and whoever will hire out individual other companies. Like, it's not a branch of Hertz that is managing their Twitter. It is somebody else at another like customer relations company that has access to the Twitter account and will field customer service issues in direct messages.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like the reason I figured that out, I mean, it's not a mystery or anything like that, but the reason that was brought to my attention is because at one point the person I was chatting to from Hertz was like, they're like, all right, so we want to refund you the money that you spent. We want to reimburse you for the issue that we caused. So, I have your credit card number. And I was like, what the fuck? Like, no.
Not over Twitter.
I'm not giving it over Twitter. And the person's like, okay, listen, my name is this. This is my first and last name. This is the company I work for. And
doesn't matter.
Here's my LinkedIn profile.
It's not this guy that you're worried about, though.
Right. No, I understand that. And I definitely gave him my credit card over Twitter.
Oh.
I deleted the DM. But yeah, it was fine. I got my money.
God. Yeah. Yeah, I used to do that job. Not for Hertz specifically, but I worked for a company that was like an outsourced social media customer service maintainer. Yeah.
That's funny.
Yeah. I got to do it for what you'd think would be like more fun clients. Like I was contracted to work for video game companies working on like really cool video games. But it's actually worse probably in most cases, because those are like the worst customers of them all. They're just all angry and want their money back and all that
How
stuff.
How old were you?
That was my first time through college. So it's like 19, 20.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's it was crazy, man.
It was a great gig. Probably the best possible job I could have had through college.
That's so funny.
Yeah.
I feel bad for phone support people and web support people. Although they do have that nice barrier of the screen between them and the person that they hate the most.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, a lot of times you don't get that liberty in retail.
Have you seen the movie Sorry to Bother You yet?
No. It's like that and Black Klansman and a whole bunch of other movies are still on my like 2018 movies to watch list.
Yeah. What else do you have on there? I'm interested just because I've been kind of rounding out the last of the ones that I wanted to see.
Well, I watched, what was it? New Year's Eve. Aaron and I watched Bird Box, and that was terrible.
Oh, you didn't like it?
Dude, that was one of the worst movies I've ever seen.
Why?
I'll send you the link. Yeah, spoiler time. No, it was. There's no need to spoil anything because they spoil everything. And like, there's no suspense in the movie at all. There's like a couple cool like action scenes, but most of it's just really bad screenwriting. I'll send you the Red Letter Media link because they say it all in like 35 minutes. They nail exactly why this movie is terrible.
Oh, interesting.
Anyway, Aaron and I watched that, and the next night I was like so mad. I was like, I need to watch a good version of that. So we watched A Quiet Place.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's what I'm thinking. Like, what's the next one going to be? Like, you can't like hear anything.
They did that.
Like they did that.
Yeah, it's called Hush or something like that.
Oh shit.
I forget. And then if you do what if some the next joke to obviously make is smell, if you smell something, but then that's what, spoiler alert for The Happening, that's what The Happening is about. Don't worry, spoiler for this terrible M. Night Shyamalan movie that came out over 10 years ago.
Yeah.
That's one of the worst movies ever. That's actually, that was worse than Bird Box, but it was better to watch than Bird Box because of how hilarious it was. Mm. Like Happening was a fun watch.
Was that the beginning of the end for his like credibility as a filmmaker?
No, I think Signs was very good, but yeah. I think it was the beginning of the end.
Okay.
Because of the, he was just caught in that, you know, that mess of, I have to make a twist. I'm the twist director. Right, I gotta make twists. All my movies have to be twisty and gotta surprise my viewers at the end. I can't just show them a movie that's good.
Lady in the Water.
Yeah. Oh my God. Then he tried to not do a twist, and then it was really bad. That was the worst thing I've ever. That was
all I remember about that movie is the goddamn character that only has one arm that's like super jacked.
Yeah, he has two arms, but one is yeah, you're right. One is very jacked, and the other is just
normal.
Anybody else's arm. Yeah. And it, oh man, I get that. That movie made me furious. Back to that in a second, but for the reason I think Signs was the beginning of the end, because I'm saying it's a good movie. I enjoyed Signs. It's fine, is because of like the end of the movie. We're just gonna hit like every spoiler, I guess. So if you haven't seen this, but so
I don't think I think Signs is past its time. I think you can't be spoiled by Signs anymore.
I guess, but I mean, it's not really much of a spoiler. I guess there wasn't a huge, the twist was like the swing away thing, right? And like the sense that everything ties together and the, you know, the kid knows and that everything happens for a reason or whatever. But like the thing with the aliens at the end was like with the water, that was really funny to me that like, and funny to everybody who watches, like the aliens came to a planet that's covered in water. Yet they're allergic to water?
Yeah.
Like, what? So there was a really... I was reading a thread on the internet about the best fan theories that people subscribe to, and someone said that they're a really good Signs one, which is... There's obviously no reason for this, but they're trying to rationalize the water thing at the end of that movie, and they say that the aliens are actually... All the aliens that invaded in that movie, they're not really being invaded. They're being sent to, like, it's like a penal colony kind of thing. Like they're alien prisoners or like alien death row people, and they're being sent to a planet that they have no chance of survival.
Yeah. So they're Alcatraz.
It's like, I guess they're Alcatraz or they're, you know, capital punishment, I guess.
Interesting.
And, yeah. Well, I mean, yeah, there's no grounds for it at all besides like why the hell would aliens just, I mean, the planet is covered in like 80% water, right? You know, like what are they thinking? There's probably some way to other, like, I bet M. Night rationalized it differently. It's like, oh, it's not salt water. It's fresh water. It's fresh water.
Uh-huh.
I was the guy who killed the guy's wife, remember? Aaron, The Happening is on, no, not The Happening. The Village is on Netflix right now. I think it was on Netflix in the last couple months. And Aaron had never seen it. And I was going to go for like a 13 mile run or something like that. And I knew I was going to be gone for like an hour and a half. And Aaron's like, oh, good. I'll just watch The Village now. And I'm like, all right, I'll see you when I get back. And I got back and she's at the very end of The Village. Spoiler for The Village coming up in the next 10 seconds. And it's at the end when she's outside the compound and just hanging out in the medical office, like asking for the medical supplies. Have you seen that?
I've not seen this one.
Okay, well, don't watch it. It's bad. Like, it's like there's some good chilling moments, but it's just a... man, like that was so. Yeah, I think Signs was great. Beginning to the end, though, it just got progressively worse. I'm trying to, and then the Lady in the Water, huge low point.
Yeah, such a just an awful movie.
Yeah, do you remember Devil? I don't think it was M. Night Shyamalan directing it, but it was him producing it, I think. And do you remember that movie at all?
Yeah, it's there's like an elevator involved.
Yes, so essentially there's like six characters trapped in an elevator, and one of them is the devil, and weird things / hilarity ensue. And I remember in the theater seeing the trailer for that, and people were just like, "Oh, damn, this looks crazy, weird." Like it was like it was that time for movies where like they were trying to like. I'm not saying like original content was big then. There were not new intellectual properties like being spun at that point, but people were like really thirsty for original concepts, and this is a pretty original concept, or like a not a Marvel movie, I guess. Mm-hmm. And people were like, oh, this looks really great. And then all of a sudden at the end, it's like from M. Night Shyamalan at the end of it. And everyone's just like, oh no. Like there's like a collective groan. I feel like there are YouTube videos of audiences groaning as the trailer for Devil ends.
Yeah.
And just being like, oh God. I tried watching Last Airbender. Did you ever watch that?
No, that's not a series that I was even familiar with, like on TV. So I didn't watch the movie.
Oh,
I'm very wary of live action anime things.
Yeah, so. Well, I don't think it's ever gone well. But I watched it and I didn't. This is again as someone who's never seen the anime. I've never seen the anime either. It was. I didn't hate it. My roommate he turned it off after 15 minutes. I think. My roommate did, but I was like, this is pretty inoffensive, like, but it probably is very offensive to anybody who's a fan of the anime.
That's interesting. It's his lowest rated movie by far. Like on Letterboxd, it has a 1.2.
But do you think that's just like the angry internet trolls that was like, he messed up my anime?
I don't know, because I think Letterboxd
the critics
is a little
hated
bit,
it too.
It's a little more discerning, right. But
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm going to skip that. I'm looking forward to Glass. I really think he turned it around with Split. Split was a really good movie, in my opinion.
Split was watchable. Aaron hated it. I was laughing a lot during that movie. Like, mm-hmm. It was... but, I mean, like, it was a good flick, you know? And, like, I'll watch Glass. I might not see it in theaters, but I might have to see it in theaters just so I don't get a spoiler or anything like that.
Yeah.
That's really my... Because, like, I was watching Split, and... I told Ben, Vinish from Vinish Fair, and he's like, oh, dude, text me after the ending. I want to, like, see your reaction, man. And I'm, like, waiting for this ending to be, like, crazy. I'm waiting for the twist, the M. Night Shyamalan twist. And then, Bruce Willis just, like, shows up at the end of friggin' Split. And I'm just like, what is... This is what he was leading. I was like waiting for some crazy twist or like the pertinent to the plot of the movie, not to the plot of whatever's coming next, but like to the plot of this movie for it to tie up. And it ends super unsatisfying. You know, like the ending of Split, it's a good watch, but like the ending just super unsatisfying.
Well, it's just to set up Glass.
But that's a 2-hour setup.
I know.
That's insane. I think stupidest thing ever. Make it like a web series or something.
It didn't need to have an ending. Like, this is not one that needed to have a particular ending. It just needed to tell the story.
Movies need endings, Jake.
I don't always agree.
I mean, they need to have something. Like, I'm trying to think of like...
I think it had some finality and it just had like... It had like a sort of a stinger on the end of it.
The stinger is not the offensive part to me. The offensive part is that like there was no like action. Like what was the climax of the movie? He's like eating a girl's intestines the cell.
Whose story is it? Do you think it's his story or do you think it's her story? That particular movie.
I think it's his story.
See, I don't think so. I think the story is about her survival. From this maniac, and maybe the maniac
like
is the most
story.
Important part of the story, but it's not his story that's being told.
Right, it's her story, but like ultimately, she's like he comes up to her in that cell, and he's like, "Oh, you're messed up like me too." Oh, woo. There I go.
All right. Well, this has been a wormhole. What I wanted to know is like, what other movies have you watched or do you still plan to watch? For 2018, because it's awards show season and the Golden Globes have already happened, so
definitely Roma.
Okay,
that's on my list, but I think that's it. Roma, Black Klansman. What else? Let's pull up a list of 2018 movies. Standing by. All right. Don't want to watch Star Is Born. Don't want to watch Venom. Don't want to watch First Man. Does Spider-Verse, when did that come out? December?
Yes.
Yeah, wow. That's crazy. Eighth Grade, that's on my list.
Mm-hmm.
Believe it, like, as silly as it is, I want to see Mission Impossible Fallout.
Apparently it's very good.
Yeah, that's definitely like it'll fill my dumb action movie quota for the year. But I heard it's very good. Can You Ever Forgive Me is on there. Let's see. I don't want to see Bohemian Rhapsody. I have not had any interest in seeing that movie.
Oh, okay.
Since the first trailer. People were just surprised that it won at the Golden Globes, right?
Yeah. I don't know. I want to see it. I'm looking forward to it. I wanted to see it in theaters, but those were some busy months.
If Beale Street Could Talk.
Yeah.
Yeah, Moonlight was so fucking good. I want to see Bumblebee. It's supposed to be good.
Sure.
Green Book. I mean, Green Book looked like kind of like a, like that, like it looked like a parody of, like, you know, like on YouTube when it's like emotional movie, like buddy emotional movie, but like it feels like a little bit more important than that. So that's on the list.
Okay.
I saw Fantastic Beasts. That was bad. Vice, definitely. I want to see Creed 1 before I see Creed 2.
I didn't even know there was a second one.
Yeah, I can't believe that came out. Shoplifters? Somebody said something good about that.
Oh yeah, that one's getting like it's kind of like an underdog. Like I hadn't heard of it prior to award season, but a lot of like the actual lists, like the ones that put some thought into it, they're raving about that movie. It's
still playing right now in in Brooklyn. Wow, it's crazy. Mandy, just because of, I have no idea what it is. Like I look at the cover and I've seen like a couple stills from it, and I'm very confused and intrigued by it. Don't care about Deadpool 2. Wow, Ready Player One came out in 2018. That was terrible. Ant-Man and Wasp is just like, that came out and that's just, I mean, we're venturing farther and farther away from award season.
Right.
But I still do want to see it just because it says you've got to see all the Marvel movies, buddy. Got to see them all. Isle of Dogs, that was 2018.
Have you not seen that?
No, I didn't.
Oh, buddy.
I know. Well, Aaron saw it like without me. And so then I'm just like, well, who am I going to watch this Wes Anderson movie with now? You know, like I'm just going to sit there alone watching Wes Anderson. I don't think so.
Yeah.
I don't know. Like there's a lot. There's a lot on the list.
I hope you like Green Book because I like that one a lot more than Letterboxd seemed to.
Yeah. I mean, well, people liked it a lot.
No, it was really good.
8.3 on IMDb.
Have you seen First Reformed?
No, what's that?
It's an Ethan Hawke movie. Apparently, it's like crushing it.
Oh yeah, with the it's like the church thing.
Pastor of a small church in upstate New York starts to spiral out of control after a soul-shaking encounter with an unstable environmental activist and his pregnant wife. So, yeah,
I definitely want to see that.
He's probably going to get some Oscar noms for this.
Now, what was that comedy? It's on Netflix right now. Shoot, it was Aubrey Plaza was in it. It was a comedy, like The Little Hours. That was 2017. All right. So I'm an idiot. Sorry guys.
time flies.
Yep. Delete that from your brains. But yeah, it's just like a joke, like movie comedy about nuns and stuff. That was funny. Hmm. When was, Ingrid Goes West? I'm on the Aubrey Plaza kick.
I don't know. I don't watch a lot of her movies, I'll be honest.
She had a big 2017, then. Those are two good movies.
I got to check out Roma. I'm still looking forward to seeing Mandy, Hereditary.
Hereditary. I listened to... Oh, I know. I watched the Red Letter Media on that, and so I have no reason to see it. Also, it's a scary movie, and I'm chicken shit, so I don't watch scary movies.
Yeah. It's like the best horror movie of the year, though, and I just haven't had an opportunity to sit down in the dark and watch it. That's how I generally like to watch it. And
How do you do that to yourself?
Oh, man.
Can we talk about horror movies? Like, what is the appeal to you?
Well, okay, there's a little bit of follow-up here because last week we talked about Alien Isolation.
Yes.
And I continued playing it. And I've gotten to the part where the alien is like out, like really out and about and like, you know, in the areas where you're venturing.
Just taking a stroll.
Dude, it's scary as shit. That entire game is suspense. Man. I get stuck in one aisle way, okay? And all I have to do is get through... I have to backtrack from where I was. There's like nothing to it. I just have to get from where I was to do one mission back to the center location where I can like get on a train or an elevator or something and go to a different part of a ship. So, you know, you're thinking like, okay, this is easy. All I have to do is get there. But then there are these androids these working Joes that just kind of filter around. And after a certain point, the ship goes on like high alert and all these working Joes, they're like looking for you. And so if they see you, they kill you. And there's like nothing you can do about it. Like there's no, there doesn't seem to be any way to really fight back. I've never been given the opportunity to like mash a button to, you know, throw one off or something. So you have to be really, really sneaky. And so I spent probably 3 hours just trying to get through this one part where I just have to round this hallway, get back to an elevator, and go back to where I came from. And I just couldn't do it. And the alien is now out and about. So you have to watch these vents that are up ahead, because if like, you know, slime, like the saliva is, you can see it trickling out, you know, he's right there. So you can't walk under it or he'll grab you and pull you up. So yeah, there's like all these different things, and it's dark, and it's like, it's late at night, and I'm just like, I'm pissed off, and like my anxiety is just like pumping, because you know, it's just, it's all suspense, and the music, the soundtrack's amazing. It's a great game, but I'm very, very bad at video games. So what I ended up doing was I basically, like, I found a way to, you know, pump some smoke into the room, turn off the lights and fire off some music so I could like kind of be shielded as I go through. And that worked halfway through. And then I just had to book it. And I just ran, and I just had to like count on outrunning these working Joes, and I was able to do it and get back to the thing. But man, yeah. So I got through that. But then May and I, last night, we started playing again, and the alien comes, and it's huge.
Yeah, it's big.
It's massive. It's so good. And like the animation is fantastic. You're, you know, you're like hiding underneath of this like table or something, and it, you know, it's walking right by you. And you have this motion tracker, and you can see that it's like coming close, but then you want to put the motion
the
tracker.
Thing. Oh,
yeah.
Man.
Then you got to put it away. So it comes closer and closer. And as it walks by, like its tail just kind of like slides on the ground in front of you, making noise. And like, just, oh my God, it's such a good game.
No thanks.
But I was, it's
you
super
can keep
scary.
It, buddy.
It gave May some nightmares, I guess, but
yeah,
I'm enjoying
man.
It.
That's terrible. Yeah, I couldn't even play Dead Space. Like, I mean, I did, you know what? I played the first 10 minutes of Dead Space or whatever, first half an hour maybe, and then turned it off for like 6 months. And then Ben was finally like, yeah, let's play Dead Space. And we beasted through that game, and I was just...
Is it better when you play with somebody?
Yeah, because, well, it's like watching a scary movie. Like, when we watched, like, as bad as Bird Box was, it had, like, some suspenseful moments in it, just the way it's manufactured. And I just yell at the screen when I'm nervous, you know? Like, so I can't go to see it in theaters, because I'll just start yelling and being angry. Mm. You know, I'm terrible with scary movies, man. I have to diffuse this. I have to diffuse the tension, you know? It's the only way for me to process a scary movie. Like, if a jump scare is about to happen, I need to just make as much noise as possible so I can't get startled.
Well, I feel for you. I think that makes it more fun, though. Like, I think that's why most people enjoy scary movies.
That's the thing, is like, what makes you enjoy it? Like,
because
why do
it's
you
doing
like,
something to you. You know,
is it because you know it's not, you know, you're not scared of it? Like, you know, it's not real.
Well,
so therefore,
yeah,
like,
I think there's a part of that. That's something that was definitely instilled in me at a very young age. Like, I remember even with Star Wars, like, it's not real. It's not real. You don't have to worry about it. So like I always had to remember that movies weren't real, because if I got too worked up about it, I wouldn't be able to like finish watching the movie. My parents would just send me to bed because they, you know, they wouldn't want to scar me. So I had to play it cool, but I could still enjoy being thrilled by it. And I think that's why people like roller coasters, which I absolutely despise and I won't get on. But with the roller coaster,
I love roller coasters.
Okay, this doesn't make sense then, because roller coasters can kill you. Like, people have died on roller coasters, and people don't generally die watching a scary movie.
They have heart attacks sometimes.
People can have a heart attack on a roller coaster too, but the movie isn't gonna, you know, throw you off somewhere. It's not gonna decapitate you.
Yeah, but like, you know, they got experts for that stuff. They got
sure.
everybody calibrated.
But I have been at Six Flags when I've seen something fall off of a roller coaster when nobody was
head?
On it. Nobody was on it. They just like every once in a while they have to run it, like just as a, you know, like a systems check. And
I
watched something fall off of the machine, and then it was shut down for 3 hours, and then people got back on it. I'm like, okay, if it's shut down for a reason, for several hours it shut down for like work, I would not want to be on the first ride after that.
That is a really weird concept. If you stand back and look at it, like the idea of a theme park, like I guess scary movies are one thing, and you're totally right. They can't kill you. They can't hurt you. It's just a movie. Unless it's The Ring. And there's theme parks, though, that are just... people will pay money to put their lives at risk. Mm-hmm. Like, like as much as they have safety experts that come in and like, you know, idiot proof all those rides and make sure that there's no possible way that someone could die on this unless, you know, horrible catastrophic failure. Like there's gotta be like some weird, like it's so weird. Like imagine an alien coming down and being like, wait, you're all just torturing yourselves? You're paying money to torture yourselves in all these different ways, movies and theme parks. Mm-hmm. And like, what are you doing? It's just it's a really weird concept to me.
It is a weird thing, but I
do like roller coasters. I think the rocket roller coaster is great.
We just want to feel something.
That's so sad that we need to like validate our existence by feeling literally anything.
Yeah.
Ugh.
I don't know. I like horror movies. I'm not big on the slasher brand. Like I've seen all of the Nightmare on Elm Street, Freddy, you know, the Freddy Krueger, Jason sagas. Like I've seen pretty much all of those. I'm not like a huge fan of those. Hatchet, I think that's one of the more modern, like kind of slasher, gory horror things. Not super into that. But I really like the James Wanverse, like everything in the Annabelle, Conjuring, Sinister sort of vibe, Paranormal Activity.
Insidious. You like the Insidious, right?
Yeah, it's like right in that wheelhouse. I like all
definitely
those movies.
Walked out of that movie. Oh God.
But then there's a lot of like really cool, weird ones out there too. I don't know if you've ever seen like Beyond the Black Rainbow. That's a super fucking weird one. Annihilation is sort of
you started Annihilation as was horror?
I think it could be classified.
It was
as
certainly
horror.
Grotesque in spots, but I like a science fiction will have me every single time. Like I will line up to watch alien movies, mm-hmm. Signs. Like it's got to be like a really like. What was that one that took place? I think Nicole Kidman. It was like an alien movie in the Arctic or something. I don't even know, man. I'm just making up a movie. I'm combining like four movies in my head right now, I think.
AVP?
No. It wasn't like a, you know, action horror alien movie. It was like a creepy aliens in the Arctic. But I would probably watch that now. I was younger when I didn't want to watch that. But yeah, the point is aliens. Well, I will watch every single alien movie that I can find.
Yeah.
Or like science fiction, like Annihilation was one of my favorite movies last year for sure.
Yeah, it slipped lower than I would have thought, but I really think I needed to give it another watch because I watched it fairly early on and I don't know. I didn't give it the attention that I think it deserved.
There's a video of a guy who made me appreciate because somebody had posted a scene saying that like the bear scene, mm-hmm. Being deliberately vague with this description, the bear scene, in Annihilation is like one of the scariest scenes in 2018 in a movie, mm-hmm. any movie. Review. Let's see if I can find this video. Never mind. Anyway, it's just this. So somebody had linked to a description of Annihilation, saying that like, oh, this is about like this is. This is why this movie is like everybody's getting hung up on the ending of this movie and you know, it's something else.
Mm-hmm.
Lessons from the Screenplay did a really good video on it today or last
week.
Yeah.
There's definitely a lot more that I need to absorb on that movie. I think it's an intelligent movie in a lot of respects. It's not like, it's not an obvious science fiction. It's not an obvious horror movie. There's depth to it and I want to give it what it deserves, but it's going to take some time to kind of work my way back around to it. What about The Cave? Did you ever see The Cave or like any of the movies that were kind of like that?
No, I didn't.
The Descent?
No, those are that's
too scary.
Watch Cabin in the Woods. I watched
that. Love that movie.
Yeah, well, that was a Joss Whedon, right? That's why I watched it because I think Avengers had just come out and mm-hmm. everyone, like, he was getting a lot of attention. And my roommate at the time, Sam, he was a huge Buffy fan, like, watched Buffy through multiple times. Mm-hmm. And so he just like gobbled up anything that was Joss Whedon related. And then he just threw on Cabin in the Woods. So you should really watch Cabin in the Woods. It's like, it's a horror movie, but it's like not a horror movie. You just got to watch it, man. I was like, okay, let's find it.
It's a horror movie for fans of horror movies.
Or, I mean, like, I didn't hate it.
Because I don't even think it's like super, super scary. I think it's like a thrilling horror movie and it's like, It has more novelty than anything else because of its nods to all the horror movies that have come before it, you know, like,
and
especially
how meta, like it's good to watch from like for like the meta perspective of everything. It's certainly gratuitous with everything that I hate about horror movies, but that was why I could watch it, I feel like, because like the jumps, it was like, it was almost like Scary Movie minus the slapstick and sex humor, you know, like Wayans Brothers Scary Movie.
Yeah, I mean, it's like a half step away from a Scary Movie but it is somewhat frightening.
It's smarter,
and it's smarter, and it, you know, it draws a lot, and it makes it obvious that it does, especially the, you know, the one scene. God, that scene's so good.
Like, the one scene.
You know the scene that I mean. Like, it's the big scene of the movie.
Yeah, yeah.
And God, I mean, there's like the references to the Hellraiser series alone are great.
I've never watched Hellraiser.
Oh, they're terrible. They're just awful, but they're so good. They're so like, they're so interesting. I listened to what's that podcast you like?
We Hate Movies.
Yeah, I did. I listened to a We Hate Movies about
that
the Hellraiser.
Yeah, that was great. That was a
really funny episode.
Them talking about Hellraiser.
Yeah, finally, and it wasn't because of you, but I listened to your favorite podcast. But I think I texted you as soon as I listened to it, because
you did. Yeah, yeah.
I was like,
that.
Oh, I think this is the one that Mike's always talking about. Yeah,
it was really funny.
Huh.
Oh, man.
Well, you do like the Alien movies, which is good. I'm really enjoying those. I think I'm going to watch through those again soon, hopefully with May, because she's never seen any of them.
I've never seen Resurrection. Have you?
Unfortunately.
Yeah, you don't like it?
No.
Yeah, I mean, I guess there are some duds in there. Like, I think the Alien vs. Predator movies are pretty much duds. They're fine watches.
The first,
you know,
one is fine. I think the first one is fine. I don't like to treat them canonically, but I think one's okay. The second one is just like a small town horror movie. It's just a bunch of teenagers running around from a monster that has no reason to be chasing them specifically.
We Hate Movies also just did that, I think, for their in October.
Resurrection is a travesty. I hate that it exists. It's one of the primary reasons that I hate Winona Ryder so much.
Wow, that's so strong feeling. Wow.
She's the worst. She's the worst person.
Dude, what? Just for Alien Resurrection?
No,
like,
so
she
many
hasn't
reasons.
Redeemed herself from like anything else that she's ever done.
No,
like,
there are so many reasons why I don't like her. But yeah, sorry, you're not gonna get any love for Winona Ryder for me. And Sigourney Weaver, I'm super disappointed in, because the ending of three, like the ending of three happened because she said she's like, look, I don't know what you guys have planned, but I don't want to do any more after this. I don't plan to do any more. And so they ended three the way that they did to tie it all up. And
isn't that good though? Wasn't that a good ending?
I loved three. Like I think three gets a lot of crap. I think three is a really good movie, but four, God, it's bad. I've watched it twice. The first time I hated it, I thought maybe it'll be bad the second time around. It was worse. I'm done. it's not in my canon.
Did you ever read how three was supposed to be?
Probably, but why
like
don't
the
you
original
me?
Treatment? It's the monk planet, essentially. Like,
yeah,
that like it's a planet or like a satellite, not a satellite or a spaceship. I don't even know how to describe it. Made entirely of wood, and that's where the alien. That's where the whole movie takes place. And instead of, because it's a prison planet, basically.
Right.
It's an Alex Jones prison planet thing. Like, just prisonplanet.com. But no, it's a penal colony, right? That's what it is in three. But it was supposed to be like a monastery planet, I guess.
Yeah, but those monks aren't going to be trying to hurt anything, so.
No, but I think it made for some amazing visuals from what they were describing.
It would have been really cool.
The concept art.
It wouldn't have been as dark.
It would have been as dark because it's a cavern. It's like a planet made of wood, and like the outer layer of it is wood, and then it's just big, like a big cavernous. It's like being inside a catacomb or something like that, essentially. Very in line with, I guess, the other aesthetics of every other Alien movie, essentially, like dark and, you know, but more wood, more organic, carbon based.
They went the opposite direction though, because everything in Alien 3 is like all, you know, nasty corroded steel.
Right. Yeah, and just nastiness. Oh man,
I'm a fan though. Like, I'll watch anything with Charles Dance.
Have we talked about my first experience with watching an Aliens movie?
No.
Oh, man. It scarred me for life. I mean the scar is still there. It's like, it was because I was, I had to have told you about this before. Mm-hmm. All right, stop me if you recognize the story, but I was at I was homeschool sick or something like that, and mm-hmm. it was like middle of the afternoon, and they're showing Aliens, the James Cameron one,
right,
on like USA or some cable network with commercials and everything. And I turned it on right at the end of the movie, right when it looks like everybody got away, essentially. Mm-hmm. And so we have Sigourney Weaver talking to Bishop, and suddenly, like, the acid, I guess, drips down, and then a tail just pierces Bishop through the middle. Mm-hmm. And imagine just being like 7 years old, and that just shows up on your TV out of nowhere. You're sick home from school, probably with a fever. And I couldn't sit down after that, like, without looking behind me. I couldn't sit down in the bathtub if I was taking a bath. I had to start. That's like when I transitioned to showers, I feel like, is because I couldn't sit down in a bathtub because I felt like a tail was just going to sneak out from the ground and just pierce me. It's like totally irrational fear, but it's just something that stuck with me. Like, I was very, very scared of this, and it continuously scared for many years after.
Huh.
Yeah. And it took me a long time to actually watch it again, but then I watched it when I was like 15 or 16, and it just renewed my love for the film. It was such a good movie.
I wish I remembered my first time. I know that I've loved these movies for such a long time, and I got the quadrilogy box set as soon as it came out on DVD, and I was so excited.
The quad.
Yeah.
Call it the quad.
I ignore it now. Well,
there's more than enough now. You got Prometheus, got Covenant that came out. It sucks that they called it Covenant, Alien Covenant, or whatever it was.
Why?
Just because it was, because what were they going to call it? Paradise Lost or whatever? That was the original name for it.
Is it okay that it's an alien movie and not a Prometheus movie? Because I was kind of hoping that, you know, like, the prequels would be the Prometheus series, and then that would lead its way into Alien, you know, gradually. I feel like he kind of had his hand forced a little bit to tie it in a little quicker.
Yes, that was a bummer. Like, I don't mind them introducing the Xenomorph. Like, I think it's important. They have to, you know, tie them together at some point.
Mm-hmm.
And bridge the gap between the two. I liked it as a standalone. Like, not, I guess it could never stand alone, but I liked it as its own thing, like the idea of it. And I guess it's just the title, so who cares, really? But like, it sucks when, you know, they have to cash in their chips and like just be like, all right, we need to bring people into the theaters for this, because Prometheus was like, I thought Prometheus looked really good. It was stupid as hell at some points, but like, it looked great. And it was like a good beginning to the Alien series.
Yeah.
Did you ever read about like why? Because I think the big mystery that I walked away with at the end of Prometheus is like, it just raised too many questions and didn't answer them, a lot of them. And so like,
oh, but that's okay. What I love so much about Alien. Like, it's such a big world. Go ahead and continue.
I'm just saying, like, did you ever look into why the, what do they call them? The makers or were the creators or what's their?
Sure.
There's. Whatever, yeah. the big tall white people. Mm-hmm. What is their motive in like trying to kill the human race? Did you ever read into that?
I've read a lot of things about it from a lot of different points of view.
Okay, because what I read from somebody, some trivia thing on IMDb, I think, which who knows the veracity of that, but it's confirmed in other sources too, so who knows, is that that Jesus Christ, mm-hmm. The Christian savior.
You've already lost me, man.
Yeah. Okay. The Christian savior, Jesus Christ, was one of them. He came to earth.
No.
And he was crucified by humans. And so the creators were like, well, we fucked up. Let's destroy all these things.
Nope.
That's what I read. I'm looking for that right
that's
now.
That's a bad theory. Like, that's not even close. Cause Jesus,
I don't think it's a theory, man.
Jesus didn't create humans.
No, well, I mean,
what do you mean we fucked up? Like, what they just humans they created him and then they left. Yeah, like, they left a Jesus to be their god. Like, what? That doesn't make any sense.
It's from Ridley Scott's mouth, man.
No,
it's from Ridley Scott's mouth. I'm sending
it
to you right now.
It doesn't seem real. Where are you reading this?
I just sent it to you. It's on the famous website IndieWire.com. Ever heard of it?
No, man. No, I don't buy that. I'll read this later, but I'm discrediting that.
It's not okay. The date on this article is not April Fool's Day, just to be clear, this thing that I sent you is not April Fool's Day.
Okay. Well, I'll save that for some midnight reading, but yeah, I don't buy it. What I do like about the Alien series is that, you know, it's mythical in a lot of ways. Like from the very start, like there's always been, you know, myth surrounding it, and that became even more prevalent in Prometheus with all these like idols and, you know, like stone carved things telling stories, and there's a myth to it, and it's interesting in the same way that Star Wars myth is interesting, but has more of like an organic, you know, Paleolithic feel. You know, like there's the human origin story that's being told somehow with this. And Prometheus ending with all the questions was great for me. I couldn't have been happier walking out of that theater. And looking at Letterboxd now, I've logged a movie 3 times and I still have it at 4.5 stars. That's probably a little high. I haven't watched it in a couple years.
I think it's way too high, man. That's like, it's not that good a movie. Like it looks great.
Yeah,
that opening scene with the ship landing on the planet. Like that's cool and all, but like the problem with like raising too many questions is just like you can't come away with an understanding of that film, like of why everything is happening. I don't know. If it's,
there are so many things you can tie up.
It just
movies
can't
like
stand
like,
alone.
At the end of the movie, you have all these characters. Most are dead. But you've got these characters, you have these androids, and they each have their own motivations, their own understandings of what's happening, their own questions that they want answers to. And then there's the rest of the movie, which leaves us with questions and answers. And I don't think that a movie necessarily has to like answer all of those questions. It doesn't even necessarily mean that it has to end with a sequel. Like it could go on forever. Like the most affecting story in the past several years for me has been A Ghost Story. I don't know if I've mentioned it here before, but like the movie A Ghost Story wrecked me, like completely wrecked me. And it doesn't, I don't think that it has, like there's no conclusion. And that's the point of the movie. And I like a movie like that. And especially in a world like this, which is so rich in lore and its own like biology, there's so much science, like fake science that goes behind the creatures and their origins and the goo, like the life cycle of the, you know, of the xenomorph and all of its like related creatures is fascinating to me. Like the xenomorph frogs, like the detail in these movies it's absurd. And I love it. Like these new ones take the universe and they just blow it open, because I think the original series was a horror series. Maybe the third one you could argue is like more of an action film in a way, but
second one was an action film. Like you start off with a sci-fi horror, and then the second one was exactly, it follows the same pattern as Terminator. You know, just like Terminator 1 was a horror film. Terminator 2 is a James Cameron action movie. Terminator 3, we just don't talk about. So I guess that's where they diverge. But
maybe we don't talk about them enough.
It just evolves into a steamy pile of trash eventually with the sequels. But
maybe, but those ones are very sparse. Like they're very sparse, suspenseful horror movies when they are horror. When they evolve into action, like, you know, you got Sigourney Weaver with the flamethrower. That's pretty badass. But
yes, it is extremely.
But these newer movies,
iconic.
They're bigger. Like they just feel so much bigger. It just blows the universe wide open. And
if you just never want to be satisfied at the end of it, sure. Like.
I like that there are like hidden motivations. Like there were hints to, you know, the more sinister aspects of the Weyland-Yutani corporations in the AVP movies and in some of the related media. Like even in the video game, there's, you know, hints of corruption. The second movie was started out with a ton of, like, the whole premise of that movie was corruption. The fact that they went back out there looking for the thing was all corruption on the part of the Weyland Corporation. But this newer one, like, it just goes so much deeper, and like you can find out that it's not just a totally monetary thing that's driving the bad guys in this movie. It's they're all there for the same reason. They all want knowledge and they all want answers, but some people want it more than others, and they want to get it in ways that are not purely scientific, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's... it's nice. You're right. It is nice to have the universe exploded and expanded, and I like when questions are raised in movies, but it's like to understand a character in a movie. Like I haven't seen A Ghost Story, so I don't know what kind of conclusion takes place in that. But I mean, if I'm to enjoy that movie, I want to be able to understand the characters in it. And it's just, I guess if you consider the engineers characters in the Prometheus universe, it's just like, it's kind of like, it's like Bird Box, you know, like what the hell is chasing these people? What the hell, like what is, like, I guess a monster doesn't need a motive, but like it needs something. It needs to have like some reason.
Does it?
That it exists. Does it? I think it does.
No,
yes.
No. I would argue a completely different story in Bird Box, which I thought was a pretty average movie. I thought it was like, it was fine. I didn't hate it. I didn't love it. But what they're running from isn't, like, I think people wanted a monster. They wanted a monster that like either had, or they wanted like some sort of divine entity that had a motive, or they wanted a monster that would take the place of that entity as this, you know, motivationless thing, like just something that just wants to kill for no reason. Like the xenomorph, it's just a killing machine. The xenomorph has no rationale, it has no goals, it just lives to kill. And I think a lot of people in a monster movie want that because it allows them to, it's easier to watch because you don't have to think about the motivations of anything else. But I like it the opposite way. Like, I don't think it has to be a monster to be devoid of motivation. Like, I think it can just be like a scientific or mythical or divine, whatever you want to, however you want to look at the Bird Box thing, whatever the creatures are. I think that they could be devoid of motive, but also be devoid of face, because it can just be a natural disaster. Like, it's basically just a natural disaster that these human beings have to contend with. It's no different than like severely inclement weather. Like, they just have to find a way to survive.
What do they want?
Who cares? Who cares?
I care. Well, I think a lot of people care.
I think a lot of people care too. I don't understand why there has to be anything though. I think it's interesting that it's not, because if they did have a motive, then what really makes it any different than any other, you know, like monster movie like that? That's why the Halloween movies were so successful, because you have all these slasher movies of the time, and you know, Freddy has, you know, like he's this like magical science fiction fantasy crazy, you know, killing creature who just, you know, whatever. But the thing that made Michael Myers so scary is that he's just a human being that just kills. Like, he doesn't have any feeling. He's just a complete sociopath and a psychopath, or whatever. What's the right term there? Is he a psychopath or a sociopath?
Psychopath.
Okay, he's a psychopath, but he has like no feelings. Like, they showed that in the newest one a lot. Like, he just, you know, these people are trying to egg him on, like screaming at him. The entire prison yard is going nuts and he just stands there, and it's super chilling because you don't know what to expect from him. You don't know what to expect from the xenomorph sometimes, because he's hiding around, and like, you know that he's going to kill you if he sees you, but when he's just standing there, you don't really understand him. And that's what's so fascinating about it. And with Bird Box, I'm not saying it's like a super compelling movie. I'm not going to argue that it's like even one of the better science fiction or horror movies of the year, but it was interesting enough because there aren't any answers, and there's no possible way for anybody in the movie to have the answers for that, because you can't study the things. You can't even see them on camera without losing your mind. So why would we as the audience expect to know more about them than the people in the movie? We're supposed to feel like the people in the movie.
There are just rules, you know, and it doesn't really make sense. Like, I get that. Yeah, I mean,
but why are there rules, and why are there only so many rules?
Because a horror movie has to play by rules. Maybe that's what Cabin in the Woods was poking fun at too. But like, there, like, for any horror concept to work, I feel like there need to be rules to this thing. Like, and the rules in this case are, for Bird Box, is that, okay, so you have these creatures that are, you know, mythical demons or whatever, and when you see them, are you seeing your greatest fear? Do they have psychological powers? Like, they do, you know, like, they're able to tell Sandra Bullock, like, make people's voices from your brain. So clearly they can see into your brain. Mm-hmm. You can't see them, or else you go crazy. And you just want to kill yourself. Except that mentally ill people, which is a very broad spectrum of things that can happen. Like, what is it?
Yeah, that was pretty dumb.
That was one of the worst parts of the whole movie. First of all, for painting like the mentally ill as just like insane people that are just immediately going to be bloodthirsty. And like to what degree? What about rehabilitated or prisoners, like murderers or something like that, are trying to go into rehabilitation? Do they automatically? And like the English guy who is like pretending to be like normal, but then just chooses to go crazy at some later point, like. Basically, that basically, as a premise for the movie, it is the worst rule ever, because any crazy person could just act normal, infiltrate a bunch of regular people, and just kill them all. Like, it just doesn't make sense.
I don't know that they're all crazy, because remember when we heard about the insane people, not being affected, we heard about it from that guy who had already seen them, had already been crazy, like. I think obviously there were some people that were affected by it differently, whatever that it is. I don't think that matters, because the rules of the movie are, if you see the thing, chances are you're going to die. Like you're going to kill yourself. And that's like those are the rules. Those are the rules. And that's fine.
That's not the rule. That's not the rule, because then some people just don't have it happen to them. Like, some people just don't die when they see it, and that means that they are crazy and they're going to try and kill other people, that they're not going to try and kill themselves.
Well, there's an unknown percentage of people that don't try to kill themselves and instead like become envoys who make it their goal to make other people
but many of them are escapees from a asylum or mentally ill prison or something like that. They say it in the movie.
Who says
the guy's
it?
The crazy guy.
The crazy guy who made up a story to get in the house.
Oh, you're looking at it like that. I see.
Obviously, he knows that some people can look at him and not go completely mad and want to kill themselves, because he is that person. He made up the story to get into the house.
So what is the rule then?
The only important rule in the entire movie is that you can't look, because chances are, and as far as anybody knows, like, chances are, if you live in this world, you know, if you look at these things, you die. Chances are probably pretty slim that anybody in the world knows that some people can look at them and don't die, because if they end up meeting those people, they're probably not alive for very long. You know, the only people that know that some people can look and not kill themselves are the people that look and don't kill themselves. And then those people are driven to a whole new thing. But
my point still stands. If any of these people who aren't infected could just infiltrate at any point, and which point it makes no sense to trust anybody. It just doesn't make sense from a horror concept.
I think
there need to be rules.
Make that clear in the movie. I think they make that clear that you can't trust anybody, especially after the event.
Except for the giant colony of some blind people and some not blind people. Like, Jake, it does. You can rationalize like all you want as far as maybe it was this or maybe it was that.
But
from a writing perspective, it makes no sense.
At the end of the movie, when they finally open the doors to let her in, they check all three of their eyes first to double check, because that crazy guy who got into the first house and eventually had pretty much the entire house killed, his eyes were crazy from the start. We didn't see it when he first came in the door because he kept covering them because he was acting like he was crying. But in the first moment when we saw him by himself, we saw his eyes. We saw that he had already been affected by them. So the people in that place know, like,
those people have already seen people turn. Those people have already seen, like, they know what's going on at that point. It's not a surprise. Like, I don't know, man. It's just,
I'm not saying that it's an amazing movie. There are faults, but I don't think
it's
that it's completely flawed. And
I don't think it's, he's not,
people are going
too
nuts about like the creatures and what they are. Like, I'm a guy who likes to know the origins of them, but only if there's a cool way to let us know. And only if it matters. Cause I think in the Alien series, it matters, because it's a biological organism. The entire series is predicated on the fact that this is a biological wonder. It's basically the perfect species, as many people say, and they want to know, you know, its origin. They want to know its capabilities. They want to know everything about it because of its biological presence. And this Bird Box movie has these like invisible, possibly worm baby people. I don't know if you've read any of like the weird like stories that have come out about what these creatures might possibly look like, but apparently they're really dumb.
I said that a Cthulhu. It's just like a Cthulhu monster or whatever.
Oh, I hadn't read that. That's interesting.
Like, it's the whole thing is very Lovecraftian, like as far as like concept goes. You know, it's like it's a creature that's so unfathomable that like your mind, you just go insane when you see it. It's similar to what was that movie with Sam Neill in outer space, where they go to that ship, Deep Horizon, or was it something? Deep. Well, I think it was Deep. Am I just like, Sam Neill, Deep Horizon, Horizon. What is it? Event Horizon.
You're close.
Did you see Event Horizon?
No.
Oh, dude, you would love Event Horizon if you like Hellraiser, and like it's like Hellraiser in space, which I think might have happened. I've never seen a lot of them, but yeah, you need to see Event Horizon if you're a horror fan. I watched that because it was this of the sci-fi thing, and it was just insane. That I have nightmares about still.
Oh, this is by the Resident Evil guy.
It's also by the Mortal Kombat guy. All right, be nice.
Okay.
Yeah, no, I very much recommend Event Horizon if you like sci-fi and horror.
Huh. All right. Yeah, I'll check it out.
It's better than fucking Bird Box.
It's rated lower than Bird Box and Letterboxd, but we'll see.
Bird Box is a lie, and everything about it is a sham.
All right, so yeah, I'm seeing some people writing here, similar movies, Alien, Hellraiser, Sunshine, Roper Report. All right, yeah, I'll check this out.
You got to, dude. You got to. I will never watch it again because of how scared it made me, but... It exists, and it should be watched.
God, when we got on this phone call tonight, I did not think that we were going to spend at least 30 minutes talking about fucking Bird Box, but all right.
Listen, the rest of the internet's doing it, and this will come out like a week after everybody stopped talking about it.
So. 2 weeks. I feel like they're already done.
I guess Red Letter put their review out like 2 days ago, 2 or 3 days ago.
They took their time.
That's how I gauge it. Yeah, they definitely took their time. They were puzzled. They were absolutely puzzled. One of them recommended it as like a fine watch it, and the other one was just like, absolutely don't waste your time.
Huh. Did you watch The Witch?
No. If it's a horror movie, the chances are like 1 in 10 that I've seen it.
It's a horror movie, but it's a little, I don't know. It feels a lot different because it's not like, it's not necessarily things jumping out at you. It's just really creepy.
Did you watch The Haunting of Hill House or whatever?
I did.
Okay, I didn't watch that again. Scary film, but all my horror fan friends are like, "Oh, dude, you gotta watch it!" I'm like, absolutely not, absolutely not. I will not watch that.
Oh man, you're missing out on so much. But
why
that's
would
okay.
I just want to be stressed out? Okay, I get your point about roller coasters to tie back into that, but like, why would you be stressed out,
man,
in that way?
I get it. We started watching a movie tonight called The Oath. I don't know if you've heard of this. It's directed and starring Ike Barinholtz.
I don't know who that is.
It's sort of like a, I don't know, it's commentary on today's political system and Twitter. Like the premise is that in a politically divided America, a man struggles to make it through the Thanksgiving holiday without destroying his family. Like it's absurd, and it just stresses me the fuck out. Like we made it about
that's Donnie Wahlberg.
In. What?
Donnie Wahlberg is in this. Oh my God.
No, he's not.
That's not. It's a guy that looks like Donnie
it's like
Wahlberg.
It's like Barinholtz, and he does look a little bit like Donnie Wahlberg.
He looks like Donnie Wahlberg. He looks so much like it. He was in Cock Blockers or whatever, called.
Yeah, that's right. And I think he looks a lot like Dane Cook.
It's like if Dane Cook and Donnie Wahlberg had a child.
Yeah. Yeah, I can see that for sure.
But you turned this off?
Yeah, we turned it off. May and I started. I only downloaded it because I had Ike Barinholtz, who May and I happen to like. We think he's silly. And I used to watch him in Mad TV back in the day. So, you know, he's kind of like a household favorite. But this movie, I just couldn't stomach it. It's bad. So don't watch that. But no, I get what you mean. I don't want to watch something that's going to stress me out too much. I need to find some enjoyment in it. And I don't know. Not all horror movies are like totally up my alley. Some kind of lose my interest, but lately there've been quite a few that are different because they're not just a standard creature feature or slasher film.
Right now, Aaron and I are in the middle of watching Escape at Dannemora.
What's that?
You hear anything about this?
Mm-mm.
See, that's the thing. I feel like nobody's heard of this thing. It's gonna be like the best series of 20. I guess it's 2018.
It's TV.
In December, I think. It's Showtime. Yeah. It's Ben Stiller directs it. So that's, yeah. But did you see Secret Life of Walter Mitty or whatever it's called?
Yes, I did.
Yeah. So, I mean, if you like that, I think he directed that, and he's directing this, and he's doing a really great job. It's like a limited series. I wouldn't have heard anything about it, except they have a crazy, they had like a pretty, I guess I wouldn't say crazy, like, but it's, they have a pretty average, like subway poster campaign going on right now, like, or when it was coming out in December, at least. I saw it. It's like directed by Ben Stiller, caught me first because I really like Walter Mitty. So I was like, okay, well, I would check it out.
Is incredible.
It is. It's Paul Dano, Benicio del Toro,
Patricia Arquette,
other bad guy from season one of House. like, and the people I haven't heard of are really even good in it. Like, there's some like actors, you know, not, you know, like top, like not A-list actors that are in there that are just fantastic. Like the writing, the cinematography, everything about the show is amazing. And I think it did well at the Golden Globes. I think it did something at the Golden Globes. But it's just fantastic. It's like a prison break movie. You know, a lot of it harkens back to like older prisoners movies or whatever. But it's just really, really great to watch. Mm. Like, it's great to look at. The acting is, you know,
of course,
100% amazing. It's like I very high recommend. And
yeah, no,
I'm just waiting for everybody to catch up on this. Yeah, for sure. Like,
totally up my alley.
It's fantastic. I've been trying to convince Aaron to watch Patriot as well.
Yeah. See, I'm glad you said that, because like you said, Secret Life of Walter Mitty, which was written by Steve Conrad, the creator and writer of Patriot.
Really?
Uh-huh.
Okay. Well, that's selling me on it even more.
He's also the writer of The Weatherman.
Okay.
Nicolas Cage.
Nicolas Cage. Okay. Uh-huh. I did not see that.
And Wonder and Pursuit of Happiness.
I saw that.
But he's got another show in the process right now. And like, Patriot is my first or second favorite TV show of all time.
You said that in your year end post. I read that.
And he has another show coming called Our Lady Limited, and it has Ben Kingsley and Jimmy Simpson in it. And I'm so excited.
Jesus. Is Patriot done then?
Indeterminate.
Okay. The Walter Mitty thing will give me ammo at least for Erin, because I think she liked Walter Mitty when we watched it.
There's so much great about Walter Mitty. I mean, the fact that it's Ben Stiller, who's great, and it's a good story. It's by James Thurber, an Ohio guy. Love that guy, even though I have a very hard time finishing his book, which has nothing to do with him, because every time I sit and I start reading it, I enjoy it. It speaks more to me. But I think you'll love it. It's an it can't be compared to anything else really on the market. It's totally unique, and for that I think it deserves all the praise, all of the eyes, and Amazon needs to do a lot more in promoting it, because it's fucking good.
What about that Jim Carrey show?
We
funny or happy or what
we
is it called?
We didn't keep up with that.
What is it actually called? Is it Happy or something? Am I just making that up? We watched the first episode and then bailed, but not because we didn't like it, just because I think we had to watch Jersey Shore because we're fucking idiots.
The show's called Kidding.
Kidding.
Yeah.
Kidding, Happy. There's names, you know?
I know. We made it like three episodes. I think I made it three episodes in. I was watching it with May, but she wasn't into it, so I need to watch it for myself, but I haven't downloaded the latest episodes. I got to catch up on Westworld. Now that's through.
Yeah. Buckle up, buddy.
Yeah, we'll see. I'm not as excited to start it as I thought I would have been.
Yeah, I mean, season. I felt every week I turned off the TV and I was like, I fucking hate this show. I hate this show so much. And at the end of the show, I was like, I hate this show.
Yeah.
It was good, though. It was nice. It was artsy. It was, I mean, maybe artsy is the wrong word. It was ambitious. Mm. I don't know if those are, I don't think artsy and ambitious are
they're not
mutually exclusive, but I don't think they're always inclusive.
Yeah.
But it was good. It was cool. They definitely stepped out of their comfort zone of season one. The narrative structure was insane, and I wish they just put it in order. But you know what? Maybe in the special edition, Blu-ray or something, they'll put it in chronological order.
Yeah. Well, Doctor Who's done for the season, and apparently there's going to be a pretty long break between the next season. So I'm kind of bummed about that, because I was really, really enjoying it.
I think that every time I get done with a season of something or a movie, like, and I'm just like, oh, I have a whole year of just probably decent content that's going to come out and keep me busy till then. Like after Infinity War, I was like bummed. I was like, oh man, I got to wait a whole year. I'm like, oh, this will fly by. And sure enough, Infinity War is coming out in like 4 months or something like that. Mm-hmm. Like there's just so much that happens in between that, you know, like will satiate your weird media consumption needs. That is just, it's never not going to be something to watch. Like even when there's not something to watch, you can just start Sopranos or Mad Men over again and you'll just be totally satisfied.
Yeah. Could watch this really creepy Watership Down show.
Yes, I saw that too. I don't know a lot about Watership Down besides talking rabbits, is it?
Yeah, it's based on the book. It's just, you know, rabbits trying to find a new home, but it's got a great cast. That's what's weird. Like John Boyega, James McAvoy, Peter Capaldi, like Olivia Colman. There's like a ton of really great names attached to this, but the animation looks so bad.
In what way?
It just looks very, I don't know. It looks like video game animation.
Checking it out right now. Oh yeah, it does look bad. This looks like, it looks like a college student's version. It definitely looks like a final project in some 3D animation class.
It's like they just downloaded a bunch of free textures from like some kind of Blender repository and...
Oh, do you think they made it in Blender? I bet this was made in Blender.
That's what it looks like.
Yeah, I'm waiting. Oh no, they don't show any like production companies or like credit things at the end. It looks like one of those like made in Blender 3D animation movies.
I don't know. It's a BBC One thing, which is probably why they have so many great names, but the production value is kind of low. I don't know. Maybe I'll check that out, but probably not.
No, I will not check that out. I'm sorry, but
Escape at Dannemora. That's,
yeah,
that's the next one. I've only got a couple days left to break. I got to ration my content.
Did that fly by for you?
The last break? Bit did, yeah.
Yeah.
It's sad, man. I go back on Monday. I got a lot coming up. It's going to be a couple of busy months. Like finishing out January, yeah. It's just going to be getting in the swing of school again, which is going to bite because I've been waking up so late over break. And February is going to be interesting because, you know, a couple weeks in, you get your first round of tests.
Yeah, you have to get back into the habit of doing all that stuff.
But I also have a work retreat at the end of February.
Indeterminate location, you said, right?
It's been chosen. Yeah, actually, they mentioned it today on a conference call. We're going to Palm Springs, baby.
Where's that?
It's in California.
Okay, California's nice. Okay, I was going to say, is it going to be a hot retreat or is it going to be a cold retreat? Because the options
it'll be 70-ish.
What if they were like, we're going to Cleveland?
That would be so convenient and dumb.
It would be so stupid.
But no, it's fine. It's in the southern half of the state. It's like barely south of Los Angeles. So it's cool. I'm looking forward to it. Like, I've never been to Palm Springs itself. I've been to some of the local areas. Like we went to Los Angeles years and years ago. I was in eighth grade. We went there for spring break 1 year. Spent a bunch of time in Orange County, you know, checked out Hollywood sign and the observatory and drove through Rodeo and kind of that whole scene. But, we drove out to Joshua Tree, which I think we're hoping to go to on this retreat. And it snowed. Like I was on spring break and in California, you know, I had all these like, you know, West Coast ideas in my head and it snowed when we went to Joshua Tree. It was like, I guess the second or third time it had snowed there in a decade. I was really disappointed.
Did I read something about Joshua Tree having to close because of the shutdown?
Yeah, we're hoping that it's open by the time we're there, but it's shut down because people have been basically going in there and making their own trails with
driving
their jeeps
off-road.
Yeah, and
fucking assholes
destroying trees.
There's nothing that makes me more angry than going off trail.
Yeah,
as a Eagle Scout, you must be infuriated more than me.
Well, you could go off trail. You just have to be respectful. Like the ground isn't going to get destroyed by a couple of pairs of shoes. But if you know you're,
my buddy Tori, he's an Eagle Scout as well. If you step 1 foot, his threshold for his tolerance for going off trail is is zero. Like if you step off foot, like he's like one is never just one step.
Well, put this to him. If he sees, you know, some pieces of trash off the trail, is he going to leave it there? Or is he going to go pick it up?
Oh, he's probably going to leave it there.
It's worse. It's so much worse.
You think?
Yeah. It's so much worse. The ground, can withstand your feet. Like, you're not the only thing walking on it. There are deer, there are coyotes, like, depending on where you live, there are all kinds of things that walk on the earth, and they're not killing the earth. You're going to be fine with your rubber soles on the ground. But if you leave some trash there, that could potentially harm something.
Yeah, I'm texting him right now. I remember, so I said, Tor, question for you. You hate going off trail when hiking. I remember this about you. And then I'm going to say, if you saw a piece of trash off trail, would you go pick it up? I'm asking him this in our like 14 person group chat. So yeah. This is going to be, would you go pick it up?
Oh, dude, when is Coachella?
Who cares, dude?
No,
cares?
I need to know.
Why?
Oh,
because you think you're going to show up? No, yeah. I thought you were like, I want to go to Coachella.
We're going to, when I say Palm Springs, we're actually, I think we're technically going to Indio, which is smack in the middle of Coachella. But it's we're going a different time, which is good. It's funny you say Cleveland because there's a Cleveland National Forest in that part of the state. I wonder what that's
there's
like.
There's probably a Cleveland, California, too.
I'm not seeing a Cleveland proper, but there is a forest, which is interesting. Yeah, so I'm looking forward to that, but hopefully I don't have too many or any exams that particular week, because it's going to be kind of tough to talk my way out of taking exams during their originally proctored time.
Right. Teachers don't like that. Teachers don't like that because you could sell the test to everybody else.
Yeah,
you know?
But
or they have to make a whole new test for you, which is usually not.
Yeah, I think that would... I don't know. I think I'll be able to weasel my way into it. There is a testing center where I can take it under supervision, but I know what you mean. I don't think a lot of professors particularly worry about like people memorizing test questions and sending them to their fellow students, but I don't know.
This is like a short topic tangent. Have you ever encountered like large scale cheating in your academic career?
Personally, or seen others doing it, or
yeah, I guess like organized cheating. I asked this because I have a very specific example or specific examples.
Well, I'd be interested to hear yours because I don't know. There's a lot of gray area surrounding that topic. What's cheating and what's group study?
Group study? Oh, like doing homework together? No, I'm talking about test taking, like specifically exam taking.
Well, yeah. Definitely. I mean, it's a pretty common thing in certain areas of school, like there are different classes, where I think most students these days know how to cheat. I don't know if this would have been around when you were in school, probably not, but there's something called Quizlet now.
What's that?
What is it supposed to be or how is it used?
Yes.
Quizlet is a website that is used to create collections of study cards. Basically, it's used for definitions. It's used for practice questions with multiple choice responses. It's a way for you to collect questions over a semester so that you can, you know, repeatedly quiz yourself with the same material over and over again in the hopes that it will sink in by the time you take exams. It's used, however, as a tool to share answers from your class with the taking a quiz, especially since so many quizzes are done online now through like Springboard or Blackboard, whatever you happen to have at your school. People will copy the questions. They'll put in their answers. They'll get the correct answers at the end of the quiz. They'll put those in with the answers with the correct questions on Quizlet. And then you basically have a answer key that is now available to anybody with access to google.com. And so then the next person that goes to take that quiz, either in your, you know, at your institution or another institution that's using the same books, the same test bank answers, they basically have the entire quiz available to them to just key in.
Well, that's interesting. I wish I had gone to school back then. I wouldn't have cheated. I never really cheated.
Yeah. It's not, it doesn't
say
pay.
Really, yeah, like, no, I've never, like, the cheating that went on in my high school was, like, it was disgraceful. Like, there was, one of the things that I remember is, like, there would be kids that could write really small, mm-hmm. so they would make cheat sheets.
Yeah.
But, like, cheat sheets that you could palm in your hand. Do you remember seeing those ever?
Oh, well, sure, but that's not even close to the end of where that strategy could go. There's so much more you could do.
What do you mean?
Oh,
like sneaking out the answers of the test and passing it on, like proto Quizlet or something like that?
Well, no, I think like the writing small is great. I did that a lot in high school, and there were certain classes that kind of encouraged it, because like for their final, they would say, you know, you can use one note card as much as you can fit on that, yes, one note card, but you can only
like
put
a formula.
It, mm-hmm. And some would say only one side, some would say both sides, but never. Like, they would always come around to look at your thing, and if they only want it one side, they'll make you flip it over, but they never pick it up. Like, the teachers very rarely would pick it up. So, one strategy that some people may have used when I was in school was to put all your answers on the front and the back, but also take your index card and tear apart the two plies and use the inside. But then use just like a stick of, you know, Elmer's glue, which isn't that good. And you could then write additional answers on the inside, put it back together, and it looks
That's
perfectly
advanced
fine.
Cheating.
Yeah. Or they're so, oh my gosh, don't even get me started on the erasers.
Advanced analog cheating, I should say.
Because you can get an eraser, okay, get you know, any standard pink or white eraser, and you cut from one end, you cut down the length of it, so hot dog style, on just on one half of it, and then you flip it up, and on the top of it you cut from the same point in the middle to the end of it. So basically you're cutting out a small portion of the top of it, cut halfway down the middle lengthways, and you could you know, leave some on it to make a hinge, or you could make your own hinge you know, using glue, and then you have a space on the inside where you can glue little pieces of paper. And those little pieces of paper can have your notes, and then it just looks like your eraser, and inside there's secret answers.
Oh my God. Yeah, it was bad. The worst thing that I can think of, and it actually makes me furious when I think about it, just on principle, is I had a AP US history class, I guess. I think this is junior year. It must've been junior year, because mm-hmm. National Honor Society, I forget what year that is, but, I was after school one day, and some kid just saw our final exam, one of our big exams, just sitting on the teacher's desk, mm-hmm. Not as a plant, just like actually just left there, and he actually swiped the test.
Oh my
and
gosh!
He distributed it to the entire class, and I didn't find out about it afterwards. This is going to sound really stupid, like, oh, of course, Mike didn't hear about it. Sure. No, but like honestly, the only two people in the class that did not know about it, because we had two people to a table, essentially. It was like a long table and two people sat at it. That was our layout. Mm-hmm. Basically, every single person in this AP US history class got a copy of his exam beforehand and took it, except for me and the person sitting next to me. And it was insane. Like, and we had no idea until after the test that something had happened. And the teacher basically, like, he punished the entire class, even the two of us who had already taken the test without cheating, and knowing the answers and preparing our essays ahead of time. Like, it was just, it wasn't unjust, because, you know, like, obviously, everybody, the majority of the class cheated, so he can't just, like, decide two people didn't cheat. You know, it's no way. It's our word against anybody else's who tries to combat it. But it was, the worst part about it for me was that a week later, every single one of those kids walked across the stage for National Honor Society. And including the kid who sat next to me, who mm-hmm. also didn't cheat, and myself. And like, that just made my blood boil. One of them went to become like he was like top two in the class. Oh, he was like salutatorian or something. Yeah. Like it was just so gross. And it really tainted my academic experience. Cause when I think about high school, I think about like how much hard work I did. Like I probably talked about it in the show before, but you know, just coming home every day and doing like 4 or 5 hours of homework, 6 hours of homework, like being very diligent about writing papers and researching at the library. We've definitely talked about that. Mm-hmm. But like it was the hardest I've ever worked. And you know, it was in high school, I think. I worked hard in college too, but and then to see like the kids who did better than me in school all cheat on an advanced placement test, like, I don't know. I should be over it by now at 31 years of age, but it left a bitter taste in my mouth because of for an otherwise great experience in high school academically speaking. You know, it's just like, what did I work so hard for? Yeah, man.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, I don't know if you would have liked me. Like, I was the bright kid who didn't show it in grades. I showed it in ingenuity.
Well, I didn't have anything against people who didn't do well in school. I actually in middle school, like, some of my closest friends were like I floated around friends groups in middle school, and I ended up hanging out with like the skateboarders a lot, mm-hmm. who like did really badly and would always partner with them on projects. Number one, because I wanted to hang out with them and be accepted by them. But number two, because like I just thought like they could use the boost in grade or something like that. So they definitely did not object to having me in their groups. Like, it was like if I was incorporated in a group, like they were just stoked because they had, because I was the cameraman for their skateboarding videos, and then I would also boost their grade.
Nice guy, Mike. Have you seen that mid-90s movie?
Oh, with what's his name? Jonah Hill directed it?
Yeah.
No, I did not. That was 2018 too, right?
Yeah, you should check that out.
I definitely want to. And then I think I said eighth grade when we were reading that list earlier, but eighth grade is definitely on the list as well.
I'd love to talk about mid-90s on this show. I thought it was interesting.
I love Jonah Hill. Like, he's just such a bizarre character, uh-huh. and Maniac made me love him even more. Like,
yeah, it really did.
Such good shit. I've been listening. I told you I've been writing an essay recently for Old Best Friend, mm-hmm. And I've been using the soundtrack to that show to like as background music because pop music with vocals was too distracting while I was writing. Mm-hmm. And so I've just been using instrumental stuff to kind of put myself in the right mindset.
Very cool. Yeah, it's a good soundtrack.
It's an amazing soundtrack. Dan Romer did it. I watched a show recently because the composer Dan Romer from Maniac, mm-hmm. did the it was true crime show that just came out, Innocent Man. Did you see that yet?
No, but I heard about that.
Yeah, I mean I don't think it was awesome, but like Dan Romer did the music, and it was that's why I turned it on, because Dan retweeted it, and it was like, okay, well, I guess this is what we're watching on Netflix. It was a nice like 6-episode true crime thing,
right?
More about the justice system than anything, but very interesting nonetheless.
Seems up my alley.
Yeah, I mean, you love your true crime.
Yeah.
I'm surprised you didn't hop on that.
I'm coming down off of it, though. I think it might have been a...
You burnt out?
I don't know if I'm burnt out, but, like, the series that I was really enjoying has ended, or mm-hmm. kind of tapered off as new things, you know, are developing in the case, but, yeah. I don't know. My podcast listening is tapered off pretty drastically after the holiday. Like, I showed you.
Do you think that's because people are posting less frequently? Like, I've noticed my feed is like pretty dead. Like, I'm actually able to get through my feed on a daily basis now because of that.
That could be like new year, less content, but I, even, you know, what content's out there, I'm not through it. Like, I still have stuff in here from well, I guess the latest thing now is January 3rd, but I only just got into the new year like yesterday.
Well, you're not commuting as much, right?
That's right. Yeah, and so you, that should pick up.
I don't know
week.
Your what are your listening habits while you're studying? Do you like? Do you have
not can while you, I'm you studying?
Listen, yeah, you can't listen to podcasts while you do homework.
No,
right?
I usually I'll throw on something either instrumental. I really love This Will Destroy You when I'm in school, especially if I'm in a lab, you know, if I'm and for like my major, the labs are sitting at a computer with a bunch of other people sitting at a computer, and the computers are all very loud and people are disgusting and sniffing, and there's just a lot of like distracting noise. So I'll throw in This Will Destroy You like as loud as I can go in my headphones, and that's great. But
yeah,
otherwise it's something I'm familiar with, something that I know all the words to, and I don't have to like listen to super intently.
Right. One thing that's been great about getting through my podcast feed is that number one, it gives me a chance to go to other shows that I've been neglecting for a long time. And number mm-hmm. two, I get to listen to music again on my commutes.
Yeah.
Which is something I haven't done in probably a year, is listening to music on a commute.
Yeah. Yeah.
I've been listening to Ear Hustle. You ever mess with that show?
No.
No,
I wasn't sure if that was a band or a show.
No, yeah, that's a good question. Yeah, I guess that's a good point. No, Ear Hustle is a podcast from Radiotopia that does, it's produced by prisoners at San Quentin. Mm-hmm. And it's very, like, in the way that you've thrown yourself into true crime, I feel like I'm throwing myself into prison right now.
Okay.
Not literally speak. Yeah. Out of context, that would sound crazy. Out of, like, prison themed media, like between Innocent Man, between
this TV show,
Escape at Dannemora, and this, like, Ear Hustle. It's just like, it's I'm dreaming about prison now, mm-hmm. in a bad way, like in a sad, like, you know, me getting prison time for something way. It's really weird. Mm. Yeah, I don't know. It's just but it's good. Like, it's really intense at times and really lighthearted. It's like more lighthearted than you'd expect a show about prison to be, but also it turns into some really dark avenues. And I'm only on, like, the beginning of season two right now, out of three, I think. I think they finished season three, maybe.
Yeah. Huh. I might check that out. I always say that, and most of the time I follow up on it. Like, that's the dangerous thing. People always recommend things to me, and I generally take them up on it, which is...
Well, I'll watch Patriot if you check out any of the things I've recommended.
Okay.
Yeah.
I want you to check out that show. I think you'll really dig it. I mean, it's weird. Yeah. Like, you've just reminded me that I published my, like, 2018 wrap-up stuff, and we talked about kind of our goals and things last week, but I don't think I had published at that point. So I'm like, looking back through it, and it's it already feels so far away. Like, I wrote all this just last week, but it just feels...
Oh, dude, yeah.
So
it totally does feel super far away.
It's just wild.
Yeah, we're already on to a new year. New horrors. What new horrors await us in the new year?
I don't know. But like I said, this year is about finding a little more joy. So hopefully it'll be good stuff. It'll be fun stuff.
Yes. Absolutely. It will.